Case number 21-1278, Donnie Lane versus River Rouge Commission. For a long minute, that would be 15 minutes, but it's early for the public.
Good morning. Douglas Curlew, appearing on behalf of Officer Edward Otis. I believe I've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Hopefully, I won't need it.
Please keep your voice up.
Yes. Contrary to the previous case, this one's really only got one issue, perhaps to everyone's relief. The issue is whether Dominic Slayton presented adequate evidence to create a genuine issue of material fact that Officer Otis was part of a small group of officers around him at the time that he claims he was improperly kicked with excessive force.
Counsel, when we have these interlocutory appeals of denials of qualified immunity, we have jurisdiction to determine questions of law.
Correct.
My understanding is that the question whether there is a genuine issue is not one of the qualified immunity questions that we address.
Well, I addressed that both in the principal brief and especially in the reply, particularly because in this case, it's not a question of the credibility of Mr. Slayton. It's a question of whether or not he has personal knowledge to create the evidence that he's purporting to present. His testimony was, I don't know who was around me. He said at one point that,
well, it wasn't quite who was around him. He says that Otis was at his head. He was the man that was black and bald. It's true that he, you know, says he doesn't know who kicked him in the face, who kicked him the right side, left side, but in terms of his being one of the people who is, he uses the words at his head, I believe, doesn't he?
Exactly.
All right.
He does say that early on in the deposition when he's being questioned by counsel for the Wyandotte officers. When counsel for River Rouge and Officer Otis did the questioning later on, he said, you know, wait a minute. When do you first recall seeing the person that you identify that you claim is Officer Otis? He said, well, it was at the cars. And that matches. See, he has no personal knowledge of who was around him at the time. He has personal knowledge that Officer Otis was first seen by him at the cars.
Yes, but he also says that he was carried by Otis. And the reason he didn't see him is because he was facing down. But then he gets there to the car and he sees that this man who's putting him in the car, and presumably he has a spatial sense, is in fact, he can see then that it's Officer Otis.
Again, it's a question of where does his personal knowledge begin? His personal knowledge begins at the car. And at the car is where the other officer said, you know, Otis showed up later. He was coming at us when we were escorting this gentleman to him to turn him over. So that's the first place that we can actually put him. We can't put him in the
officers that place him down closer to the water.
No, Kuntz and Jones are the wind officers. Those first two that encountered him when he was in the water said we were the only two there at the time. One was on the one side, one was on the other. When we handcuffed him, we were assisted by an E-course officer, unidentified. So we've got those three down there by the water. But it isn't until we get to the cars that anybody says that Otis was even there.
Why? And but then, if Otis is at his head there, and we take all inferences in his favor, that Otis could have kicked him.
But is that personal knowledge that Otis was there, or is it speculation that Otis was there?
That Otis was there, again, if he says Otis is at my head, I mean, that seems to be. But then, you know, you get to, I just looked at your brief again where you said you covered it in the reply brief, that Johnson versus Jones tells us that if the district judge says there's a genuine issue of material fact, unless it's blatantly contradicted, we don't have jurisdiction over that question.
Right, but the later case, Behrens versus, I always get it wrong, the Behrens case later on, Justice Scalia said, that can't be just point blank what this means. If we've got a situation where there's a legal question, and the question of whether or not we've got admissible evidence from personal knowledge is a legal question, not a credibility question. That we can decide.
Does it have to be admissible in order to get past summary judgment?
It has to be based on personal knowledge, certainly. Affidavits and transcripts.
Okay, but that's people have personal knowledge of things, we would call it personal knowledge, that they don't see. Now, if you have a sense of the person who is next to you, and that person transports you, even though you don't see that person, and then you feel yourself being now placed vertically, and the same person, you can sense when someone's right next to you, the same person that has been carrying you puts you in the car, then yes, that's personal knowledge, even though you didn't see the person until you were put in the car.
He never testified that Otis was the person who he saw carry him and put him in the car. He said, I saw him at the car. I don't know who carried me. I don't know who was part of the carrying process. I don't know who was part of the kicking process. I know that Otis was at the car, the guy that I describe as the African-American bald guy, Officer Otis. First time I saw him was at the car. I don't know who was carrying me. He thinks there were two people, maybe more, carrying him because they had, he describes it multiple ways, how they got him to the car. But he never can place from personal knowledge Otis at the riverfront, in the struggle, or in the carry. He can only say, I know that he put me in the car.
I don't think he was even contending that he was at the riverfront, does he? The district judge's statement six, I'm trying to, this copy has the page numbers. Let's pass that for a minute. Defendant Otis, in the view most favorably, plaintiff places Otis next to his head when he alleges he was kicked in the heads and sides. He testified that Otis was next to his head when he was kicked, identifying him as African American and bald. Otis then emphasizes that he was not involved in the struggle to handcuff the plaintiff, but there's no necessary contradiction among that. So when, what's wrong with the district judge's statement of what I just read? He places Otis next to plaintiff's head when he alleges he was kicked in the heads and sides. Now, granted, he doesn't say he doesn't know who kicked him at that point. That's
right.
Where
right.
The cross-ex on that is pretty good, but from other cases, when you have a small group of people there, when you're in a position that you can't tell which one, that doesn't usually get you off, does it?
Well, that's correct as far as the principle, but in each of those cases, there was admissible evidence from personal knowledge of somebody that all those officers were in the room. Judge White did the Pershall versus Cook case. You had Michigan State Troopers A, B, and C. There was no question that they were all three in the room and knew they were there. You have the extraction team in the
one of the cell cases.
Right, in the cell extraction case, the Fazica case, which is the one that really solidifies the doctrine. This case actually matches the Burley versus Gagaki, and I'm positive I got that name wrong, because you had two sets of officers. You had a DEA entry team that came in. There was no question. They were the ones that came in and were in the room as a unit together when the excessive force was applied. But there were also other officers, local and state, who were keeping track of the perimeter. Eventually, they came into the room and were identified. But the fact that they eventually arrived, what didn't put them in the room or couldn't put them in the room at the time that the alleged unconstitutional violations took place. This is the same situation here. We've got officers, a small group, we don't know who, except we know Kantz and Jones admitted it themselves, are down by the water, but Slayton doesn't know. Officers carry him. Again, Slayton doesn't know. We get to the car, Slayton says, I know Officer Otis was at the car. That matches what the other officer said. We were down by the water, we brought him up from the water, Otis had just arrived, because he had been at the tail end. He was the first one that started the pursuit, and Slayton got away. So he was like the local and state officers in the Burley case. He eventually shows up, but there is no personal knowledge, there is no admissible evidence from anybody that he was there when the excessive force was applied. And that's what defeats this. It's not credibility, it's lack of foundation.
Force, are you Are you arguing that any excessive force, if there was any, was down by the water? And whereas Otis's, Slayton's statement is to the contrary.
Slayton's statement is he's got excessive force in four different versions.
Well, sure, but at the moment...
Right, I agree.
He only needs one.
Right, but he never
settled
says...
with Kunz and Jones in what, for whatever reason.
Right, but he did testify there was no excessive force when he was being put in the car, and that's where Otis was at. He complained about at the water...
being put in the car and being at the car.
Right, but he only describes it while being carried or on the ground by the water. He never puts anything after they cease carrying him to the cars.
So the district judge is just wrong when he's saying plaintiff places Otis next to plaintiff's head when he alleges he was kicked in the head and sides.
He's wrong that there's no foundation for Slayton to have made the
statement. He does place him there. You're just saying that there isn't enough foundation.
Correct.
And
he's got no personal knowledge.
And my understanding was that the car was parked pretty close to the water. Do you have a different understanding?
We don't know. There were a bunch of cars. There was a couple Wyandotte cars. There was Otis's River Rouge car. There was an E-Course car. And I think at one point he said there was a Michigan State Patrol car. There was really no evidence in the record that I saw specifically where all these cars were at. The only thing that's established by the record is that Otis was the last one to arrive. Where anybody put their car, we don't know. We know that Slayton's car was down by the water where he either jumped in or fell in, but that's the only car, the position of which we actually have in the record. I see my time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sean Cabot on behalf of the appellee, Dominique Slayton. May it please the court. I'm going to jump in right at the jurisdictional question that Judge White initially raised. And what appellant is doing is arguing the facts of the case, which this court acknowledged it cannot do. In fact, on page 23 of their principal brief, it says, Officer Otis cannot and does not dispute Slayton's version of the facts, and then they use the word per se. That's exactly what the appellant is doing in this case. They are arguing at every turn and every opportunity the facts of the case, and you cannot do that on a qualified immunity appeal. In fact, looking at the 2020 case, In re Flint Water cases, it says that under the collateral order doctrine, this court has jurisdiction over appeals involving the lower court's denial of qualified immunity, but only to the extent they raise legal questions.
Isn't it a legal question about whether your client put forward enough evidence to satisfy his burden to overcome Rule 56 and go to trial?
It is not, because
not?
He has presented more than
sufficient. Well, what does a district judge do when it grants or denies a Rule 56 motion? Isn't it making a legal determination? You know, suppose you came forward with zero evidence and just said we want to go to trial. District judge should award summary judgment against you, right? Award summary judgment on the other side. In other words, you have to come forward with some evidence to overcome a motion for summary judgment to show that there's a triable case. Isn't that a legal question? Isn't that a legal question? There are other issues that I'm not disputing everything you're saying, but isn't that threshold question a legal question?
But that's not the question in this case. They're basically saying.
So you agree with me there can be a legal question. At Rule 56.
Oh, there can be, but that's not this case.
Okay. I thought your friend on the other side was saying that basically your client put forward a bunch of speculation, and you add speculation upon speculation, that can't overcome, that doesn't satisfy the Rule 56 standard in terms of a case that a jury reasonably could find in your client's favor.
That may be what they're saying, but that's not what they're arguing and in practice, because, again, they're saying basically he hasn't given the court any evidence. That is not the case here. Going back to...
That's a legal question, right? Whether has he given the court any evidence, that's, again, a legal question. I'm not saying you lose.
Right.
There is at least a question for us to resolve, right?
I don't think so. I don't think this court has jurisdiction, because even going back to the case that was decided a week ago on October 13th, which was it's unpublished case, but Ricks versus Pauch, P-A-U-C-H, It said that the court cannot consider an appeal challenging the denial of qualified immunity insofar as the order determines whether or not the pretrial record set forth a genuine issue of fact for trial. The pretrial record, as acknowledged by the district court judge, set forth sufficient pretrial record setting forth a genuine issue of material fact. If you look at the district court's opinion, and Judge Borman is very thorough, and he lists initially plaintiff's version of the facts, and then he goes through the defendant's version of the facts. And he takes all that and wraps that around the requirements by the Supreme Court in the case of Johnson versus Jones, which was way back in 95.
I would assume that at least I thought that there's a legal question that you have to overcome, which is, has your client put forward enough evidence, setting aside looking at maybe the evidence that the defendants put forward, just the evidence that your client has brought forward, is that enough to create a tribal issue? And so you can fight that, you can resist that, that's okay. But also, if you want to just accept that, what's the evidence that your client has put forward to give us confidence that there's a tribal issue to go?
All right, so let's look at page 33 of his deposition transcript. He says, he's asked, okay, then after you get on the ground, put your hands behind your back, what happened next? Answer, they cuffed me and proceeded to kick me in my face twice, kicked me in my sides about four times. Do you know which officers kicked you? His answer, I believe it was Otis and one of the other officers from Wyandotte, but I'm not sure which one. And then he goes on to say, he was at my front side where my head was. What did he look like? Bald head, brown skin. Testimony in the case said that the only officer that was there, that was African-American male, Otis. Then you go to page 160. On page 160, he's asked a very specific question. You know for a fact Otis was there and that he kicked you, right? Answer, yes. So you have the unequivocal answer that yes, it was Otis that did that. Then it doesn't even stop there. When you go to...
Is all the evidence in your client's favor your client's own testimony? I'm not saying that's not enough, but is there something else that...
Absolutely. So former defendant Kantz, he testified on page 42 of his deposition. He didn't remember who handcuffed him. He didn't remember who was there at the time of the handcuffing. So then it was asked, well, Otis could have handcuffed him, right? But you don't remember. Yes. So again, question of fact. You have the same type of response with defendant Jones. But then the other thing that you have is Exhibit F, which was raised at the district court, which is Dotson's supplemental report.
I'm sorry, who's supplemental?
Dotson's supplemental report. It was Exhibit F. It's page...
Who's Dotson?
Dotson was a detective sergeant, and this is ECF number 82-7, page ID 1638. He wrote a supplemental report about a telephone call that he and Otis had. And in that supplemental report, it says, Officer Otis states that upon being ordered out of the Detroit River by officers and on dry land, Officer Otis attempted to handcuff Defendant Slayton, at which time Defendant Slayton began to resist being placed under arrest by Officer Otis. So Officer Kahns and Officer Jones of Wyandotte PD did assist with a struggle to handcuff Defendant Slayton. Again, a third piece, fourth, fifth, sixth piece of evidence that Otis was there at the time he's handcuffed, corroborated by the fact that Jones and Kahns, they don't remember who was there. Otis may have been, may not have been, we don't remember. But then you have this writing, this police report that says, look, I talked to Otis. Otis said, yeah, it was there. So, and then you have the obviousness of the injury, okay? This isn't a case where maybe we don't know how it happened or how did these... We asked the officers, how did these, did you see any injuries? Do you know how they happened? Yeah, we don't know. Those are huge, again, questions of fact, because it shows a reasonable juror that they do know what happened. They do know that Otis kicked him and hit him, but we don't want to say because we don't want to rat out, you know, a colleague. And so you have all this evidence, the medical, you have the testimony of the officers on the scene, and you have again, Exhibit F, which...
How does the medical show that it was Otis?
It shows that there was injury. So it shows that there was excessive force used, and that this didn't happen because he tripped or fell. That was the point that I was making there.
Jumped in the river?
Well, he didn't say he jumped in the river. He said he slipped, and he was asked the specific question, were you injured when you went in the river? And he said no. And if you look at the booking photos, which were attached to the lower court record, you can see a black eye and bruising under the eye. So, I mean, you're going to, if it was a rock or a jagged rock, you'd obviously see some...
Counsel from, help me here, because the Dotson document is interesting. I'm not sure I had focused on it before. The question of, is your theory, or do you have a theory, that Otis was in fact involved in the handcuffing at the river, or that Otis did some kicking when he was brought up to the car, which was Otis's car? Because I thought Cones and Jones and everybody else said that they were the ones that brought him up to the car, that Otis wasn't involved in that.
I don't think the record is entirely clear on that, and that's, again, one of the things that a jury's going to have to flesh through. But we do know, again, looking at the Dotson report, that Otis was not just merely somewhere in the distance, as he would like to say.
Although, am I wrong, based on everybody else's discussion of what happened, that Otis, although he had started out in the chase, he was now in the tail end and pulled up after others had already pulled up ahead of him? Is that contradicted?
He was at the end, but there's nothing that precludes him from being with the other officers at the time he's handcuffed or after he's handcuffed either.
Well, the afterwards, I agree with you, but he would have, under that theory, all of this is going on down at the river. His car is clearly up the hill somewhere. So he would have had to have come down, joined the melee, and then gone back up, even though everybody else says he wasn't involved in carrying him. Is that fair?
No, because we don't know how far that car is. I mean, you say up the hill, but I don't know that it was
a great distance. I thought we had all these wonderful maps in the record.
Numbers and blow-ups.
I was amazed at that.
But we're not talking some great distance.
Well, I mean, this...
And in fact, that's why the Dotson report becomes so important, because, yes, while he may be at the tail end, it clearly says that there's this discussion with him that says he was there during the struggle. So even if we assume he's at the tail end and parked some distance away, we know that he was involved when he's brought out of the water, and we know he's involved after he's handcuffed, and that's, what the Dotson report says. And none of the, again, when you look at Cons and you look at Jones and their deposition, they were specifically asked, was he there at the time he was handcuffed? We don't know. And again, that goes to a tribal issue, a fact that has to go to a jury. And that, again...
That the excessive force was confined to while he was being handcuffed.
And that's why the whole record is important. And that's why when you look at the record, you have a lot of moving parts that, again, has to be submitted to the jury. And it's these moving parts that the lower court recognized. We can't decide those things. We can't make a determination of who was where. That's the jury's job in a summary judgment and a qualified immunity. And that's, again, that's the limitation that this court has in this case. We can't determine what the facts are. That's the jury's job. And again, that's why the court, lower court, was correct. And, you know, when we look at the other cases, you know, the Foxia case, the Pershall case, those cases are very supportive because this case is even one step better than those cases. Because, again, in this case, unlike those other cases, we have the specific identification by the plaintiff on no less than two occasions in his own deposition. And we have the identification in the Dotson supplemental report, and we have the reasonable inference of Otis's presence and actions in the testimony of the other officers, putting him at the scene. But specifically, unlike Pershall and unlike the Foxia case, Mr. Slayton specifically said Otis was there, Otis used force. And so unless the panel has any more questions, I would rely on our pleadings.
Any questions? Questions? Thank you.
A jury can only make its decision based on evidence that's actually admissible. As far as the Dotson report, even assuming the report itself as a document would be admissible in some sense, what is said in it is hearsay. As I recall from the deposition testimony, Otis didn't even remember Dotson calling him, and Dotson could barely remember the report at all himself. So whatever was said in that report, alleged statements by Otis or anybody else in that report by Dotson, that's not admissible evidence for anybody to use. As far as the other officers, he suggested that counsel...
Well, Dotson could testify, couldn't he?
He did testify, but he has no personal knowledge as to what happened. He can only say, this is what I was told, which again is hearsay. He wasn't at the scene. Dotson's a supervisor.
It would be an admission against interest by Otis, wouldn't it be?
I mean, there are two levels, right? So he would say, he'd testify, look, this is what Otis told me. That's all I knew.
Hearsay.
It's not hearsay. It's Otis. He's a party.
Oh. As far as the report itself, that was discussed in the trial court. We didn't go into it at length in the briefs here to this court. But the Dotson report, again, it was all based on after-the-fact stuff that he was told. Otis did not even remember ever speaking to him. So the Dotson report, I don't think, would come in if it became an evidentiary issue to actually be discussed in that sense. As far as what the other officers said, it was suggested that
Would the fact that Otis said he doesn't remember... Is that alone enough to keep Dotson from testifying?
He doesn't remember.
I thought you just said that Otis said he didn't remember.
No.
I mean, if one person says you talked to me and the other person says I don't remember talking to you, that doesn't keep the first person from testifying, does it?
Well, you can say he talked to me, but as to what the content, the substance of what was said, that's what becomes inadmissible.
It's not inadmissible. It's a party, right?
Why isn't it admission against interest?
But it's not an admission by the party. It's a hearsay within. It's an admission by a party if the party said it, but this is someone else saying the party
said it. Right, so Dotson gets on the stand, and he's asked the question, is this your report? Yes. And at the time you wrote it, this is the information that was given to you. Yes. That takes care of the first level. The second level is the statements from Otis, which aren't hearsay because he's a party.
But except that if Otis were to say something that was against his interest and you heard that directly from Otis, that would be admissible.
I thought Dotson heard this from Otis.
But Dotson heard it from Otis. That's where this intervening thing comes. If I, as a party, make a statement that is against my interest, that is admissible against me. If someone else is reporting that I made a statement against my there's another level of hearsay.
When you say, if I say something, in any trial, you're not talking about what happens in the courtroom. You've got some kind of evidence of it having been made elsewhere.
Right, but again, there's this intervening level of hearsay. This is not Otis making a statement against his interests. It's Dotson saying that Otis made a statement
against him. But then it's Dotson's credibility, and all you need is his statement that, yes, Otis said this to me.
It doesn't matter. It's not a question of credibility for Dotson. It's a question of is Otis's statement admissible when it was reported by somebody else?
Sir,
does I think there's two
as
levels.
As a trial judge for a really long time.
You're only getting past one. Okay. As far as the other officers, it was suggested that they were trying to protect a colleague. How would Kahns and Jones be protecting colleague Otis if they're saying, no, we were the ones down by the river where this kicking took place? That's really against their interest not to have put Otis in the involvement. If the officers were trying to protect for their own interests, Kahns and Jones would have said, oh, yeah, Otis was down there and all these other people were down there. The fact that they completely remove him from the picture, saying, nope, Jones was on one side, Kahns was on the other side, that's what happened in the handcuffing. The only other guy down there was an E-course officer. Otis had nothing to do with it. That doesn't help them at all. That completely undermines any thought that they're trying to protect Otis. They're not even protecting themselves. But the point is that as far as what we have personal knowledge on the part of Slayton is only that he knows Otis was by the cars. He can't put him anywhere else. He can't put him in the small group down by the river. Now, is there any more questions?
He puts him by his head, and he doesn't say where that head was.
Foundational questions. What's his foundation for saying is by his head? I don't know who was down there. I don't know who was down there. I don't know who was around me. I don't know who was kicking me. I don't know who was there. I just know that Otis was at the car. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.